Blog Talk Radio.
I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had the taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Celebrate people who, like the founder of the show, recognize they're on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is part sinner, part saint. Broadcast for Late Night Poets, which is a group on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can enter the contest, you can read along in the chat, you can read the poems with us, and you can give your comments. So thank you for listening. I'm Afasiana, and with me, I believe, I have my co-host, Babbler.
Hello. How's it going?
Not too shabby. How are you?
I'm all right. Looking forward to my 3-day weekend. Tired of working.
That's fair. I'm glad you get a long weekend.
Me too. My work gives very few days off. Very few. I think we get 6, like, built-in days off. For a whole year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but Monday is one of them. So, and then also on Monday, the demolition on my office and bathroom start. So that'll be interesting.
For some reason, I thought you were going to say demolition derby. Like the cars. That's
I've never done that. I kind of wish I had when I was younger. I think I had a good time.
I've never actually, like, driven in it. I've gone to watch it. My husband loves it. I'm sensitive to noise, so the idea of, like, cars crashing together and screeching, just not really my jam.
Yeah.
It can be interesting.
It is a little bit of a weird concept, right? Like, voluntary car accidents.
Yeah. I know. At first I was like, it's so wasteful. And then my husband was like, no, these are cars that are going to be thrown out anyway, so we might as well, like, have fun with them. And I'm just like, I don't know. I'm too cautious. I'm like, it's dangerous, which I think is the point for most people. But I just couldn't relax the whole time.
Yeah, I think it's kind of for the daredevils. For the adrenaline junkies.
Yes, I think so. Which apparently is not me.
And, you know, it's funny for me, like, I think of roller coasters and things like that, and I love them, and I go and I get in line, and I'm really excited, and then I get in them, and then as I approach that first drop or turn or whatever, I, like, freak out, and then I scream. I have, like, this involuntary, like, piercing scream that first drop. And then after that, I'm having a really good time. But that first scream is really intense. And I'm, like, legit horrified and can't not do it, so. Yeah.
I would probably be like that the whole time if I actually did it. I don't know. I seem to be cursed. Like, I'll, like, try to do, like, the safe one, like, Ferris wheel, and then, like, every time something bad happens, like, the one time we were stuck and I was the one, like, at the very top. And then the guy had to climb up, like, the repair guy climbed up on top of the other ones to get to the one that I was in to repair it.
Like, oh, fun.
And that's like the safest ride.
Oh, great.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, what is he doing? Oh, he's fixing ours. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that was a long time ago. But needless to say, I don't spend a lot of time on rides. I seem to be hurt.
One of the first rides that I remember going on was the Ring of Fire at the fair. And I was fine, but my little sister wanted to go, and she wanted to go really bad. And so we got in line, and they let her go, even though she didn't reach the height line. And it's weird, because it's not like we begged or anything. They were just like, oh, go ahead. So we get in, and the Ring of Fire goes up, and my sister slips out of her restraint because she's so small, it doesn't hold her. So she just kind of fell out and was just hanging on with, like, her sheer arm strength. It was pretty horrifying. I'm like, is she going to fall and die? I mean, the good news is my sister had incredible upper body strength from a very young age. But the whole time I'm like, and this is why they have height restrictions. And this is why they have height restrictions. Like,
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty
creepy. That almost happened to me, not quite to the same extent, but I was at Universal Studios on the Jurassic Park ride, and I was too small. Not so much height-wise, but I was very thin at the time. I was like 11 or something. And I slipped through the thing too, but I was there with my best friend, and she's really strong, and she just, like, was my seatbelt, like, holding me in as we went down. Like, it's kind of like Splash Mountain is my understanding. I've never been on Splash Mountain. But it's just like, you know, you go super steep into the water. But I started to fall out. I lost my hat. But, like, I almost actually, like, fell into the water with separate from the ride. And I'm like, no, this is the thing. I'm cursed. I cannot do well on rides. Now I probably have the opposite problem. I'm too big, so I can't get out of the thing. But at the time, I just slipped right through. But there's a reason why they should be strict about, like, you know, height and weight on these things.
Yeah, they should really follow their own rules. There's a reason that they exist. But yeah, I remember. Oh, that was scary. And, yeah, scary. I'm glad you are okay. I'm glad nothing actually happened.
I'm glad your sister is okay.
I'm glad she was so buff as a young child. She was maybe, like,
yeah.
7? I think she was about 7.
Oh, wow. It's reason to be strong, being able to hold yourself up. I have this one friend who was once she had kids, was, like, always working out. And I was like, you know, like, why weight training? And she was like, what if we were hiking and my kid fell off a cliff and I had to hold them up? And I mean, like, she is kind of an adventurer, like, where she goes on, like, crazy hikes and mountain climbing. So she just was like, I need to be able to pull my kids up no matter how big they get. And she does. I mean, she's super strong, but I was just like, that's a good motivation, I guess. Like, I don't know. She is buff, but she's able to protect them.
Not the worst reason.
Yeah. You know, some people are, like, worried about the baby weight. She's worried about, like, rescuing the baby weight.
The weight of the baby.
The weight of the baby, yeah. Oh, of course, this was long ago, because now I think about it, he's in high school, but I'm like, it's making me feel old. Anyway, I guess we should get to the poetry rather than my ramblings. We'll get to some poems.
It's not why we're here or anything.
Yeah, you know. We have carryovers from last week's contest, which was based on Nevermore. Come on, brain. Why can't I think of the name of it? It's a Neil Gaiman show that I'm, like, obsessed with, and I'm blanking. It's the Dream Sandman. Just had a brain fart.
Yeah.
Okay. Sandman, which is a comic book series and TV show by Neil Gaiman, and I picked some quotes from it. So the quote that the first few poems are based on is, "Everybody has a secret world inside of them. I mean everybody. All of the people in the whole world. I mean everybody. No matter how dull and boring they are on the outside, inside them they've got all unimaginable, magnificent, wonderful, stupid, amazing worlds. Not just one world, hundreds of them, thousands maybe." Okay, so now correct me, babbler, if I'm carrying over the wrong ones, because I think I eliminated the ones we read last time. But if you're like, we just saw that, then speak up.
If I remember, I will.
The first
no
entry
guarantees.
I figure if we forget, so does the audience. So the audience is, like, shaking their fist right now. I'm fairly certain that I've split them into what was read and what wasn't. My bad if I miss something. This one is by Daniel Deschino, and it's called The Weight We Carry. "I must be a dreamer because I never really feel awake. And when I do awaken, that's when the nightmares are real. They infiltrate and weave their way into the purity of innocent dreams as a corporate logo on a pure, soft cotton shirt. I have so many shirts with symbols and logos on them. It makes me think I'm part of something. But it is really sad, very sad, when the clothing uses the clothes. Dreams seem to be the cruelest of tricksters, leading you on with hope, only to end in death, dying deep inside of you, private mass grave, and each person must carry. Don't look at smiles. Don't listen to words. They are not meant for truth. Think of what dreams have lost their way in the hidden, abandoned places you have within, and scream for direction of freedom to reality's realm. I hear those screams too. End poem.
Great read, Faziana. I found this one really intriguing to start with. I must be a dreamer because I never really feel awake. You know, just kind of going through a dream state all the time. Although I guess I interpret it more as never feeling like you fully perceive everything that's happening around you or to you. You know, like being limited by your senses, which I can definitely relate to. But I like the idea of it being just never really feeling awake. And then worse, it says, when I do awaken, that's when the nightmares are real. You know, so when they feel like they're sensing more of what can be sensed, it's not good. You know, like the things that they realize or understand are, you know, darker. Which makes me think about the correlation between intelligence and depression. You know, they say that the more intelligent will have a higher chance of depression, which I always wondered about that. I'm like, what does that say about the world, that like the more intelligent you are, the more likely you are to be depressed? That's kind of sad. But that's kind of where that takes my mind. They infiltrate and weave their way into the purity of innocence dreams as a corporate logo on a pure soft cotton shirt. It's like the nightmare is just kind of soaking into everything. And then he talks about like the symbols and logos on the shirt and how that the clothing is using the clothes. And that made me think of that 1980s movie called They Live, which I don't know if people have seen that, but like the movie, the theme of the movie isn't bad, but the acting is horrible. It's like a B movie that's so bad it's good again, if that makes any sense. There's a famous quote from it that's like, I'm here to kick ass and chew bubblegum and I'm all out of bubblegum. Comes from that movie. But the premise of it is that like aliens have taken over and are like sending subliminal messages to everybody through advertising and billboards, etc. And then he puts a pair of sunglasses on and he can see what it actually says, and it's all like obey and, you know, like basically enslaving the human race. Interesting movie from like a philosophical perspective, a comedic movie from an acting perspective. It also still, I believe, holds the number one ranking for like the longest fight scene. Anyway, it makes me think of that, like the subliminal messages and the use of people, you know. When people wear clothes that just have like huge logos on it and they are going around like, look at my clothes, I'm wearing a Louis Vuitton jacket and it says LV all over it, you know, you're advertising for their brand. Like you are paying to advertise, which I always thought was really interesting and weird. So that's where that takes me. And I think it's kind of an interesting thought. And then talking about how dreams are kind of like a, almost like a false hope. But worse than that, there's like a series of false hopes, because as you have dreams and then they don't happen or don't come true or you don't achieve them, it's a graveyard inside of you. You know, there's, it just speaks of this kind of clinging, you know, to to dead dreams. You know, and that happiness is just not true. Like, happiness is fake. So it's a pretty sad and dark write, you know. But basically, I think overall says that, you know, dreams aren't for reality. Dreams are for dreamers, and the real world isn't a dream in numerous ways. So I like it. I think it's a good poem. It's a pessimistic poem, but I don't hate it. And I think there's some really good thought-provoking concepts in here. So great write from Daniel Dechino. Faziana.
Well, it's definitely thought-provoking. With the symbols and logos and the idea of the clothing, using the clothes, really made me think about in university I took some marketing classes, and there was a big emphasis on guerrilla marketing, which was like just becoming more of a thing. And now it's like everywhere because, you know, everyone, like there's like the tastemakers of like Instagram and all of that, and like Twitch and all of the things where the people are given free things to make it seem cool. And like even before that tech, back in the old days, when all we had was maybe MySpace or Facebook, the the guerrilla marketers would find the like popular pretty people at the high school or the college or like wherever. Like that's just the ones I knew about because I was young. But that they'd give those people some brand name stuff. And yeah, I mean, a lot of companies have their logo quite prominent. This isn't the greatest example because it's not super upper class, but like Gap was kind of known for having like giant Gap across their stuff. And that basically is just a walking billboard of like, look at my stuff. But so many things, I mean, you can get, I mean, most t-shirts now are advertising for some kind of like movie or show or like what I don't know, something that's like pop culture that also has other merchandise or things that people are going to look at and go, oh yeah, we should watch that. It's like all walking ads. And there's this school in my community. It's a Waldorf school, which is a certain kind of like education system, usually for preschools and early elementary, that it's kind of like hippie in nature. They very much learn through natural ways and nature. But they have rules for their dress code, and it's not that they have uniforms. It's that they're not allowed to have any logos or like pop culture symbols or anything. They're supposed to be like plain. Just plain, so it's supposed to like level the playing field of like the kids who can't afford name brand kind of thing, and not have any distractions. It's just like totally plain at that place. So I don't know. That made me think about trying to avoid being used by your clothes. It's just I don't know. My mind has gone off, which means it was a thought-provoking poem because it has made me think about things. I really liked the part near the end. Think of what dreams have lost their way in the hidden, abandoned places you have within and scream for the direction of freedom. That poem, that stanza made me think about writing poetry because I feel like my poems are often those little dreams that have been hidden away. It's like about finding them and digging them out and giving them a little bit of freedom to scream. And I think that many forms of art can do that, where you capture that little lost dream, that thing that you've abandoned, whether it's good or whether it's a nightmare. I think painting and sketching and sculpture and writing, like so many different ways of using art can help get those dreams out in one way or another. So I don't know. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I really liked it too. I also kind of thought of my own poetry as kind of that vent for dreams, you know, the re-exploration of things. Not so much because I don't write a whole lot of poems about things that I wish had happened, as much as it is a lot of it looking back and, like, evaluating how things went. It's almost like a eulogy for a dream in some ways. Or how I managed to get where I am, which is almost like a celebration of a dream achieved. But I agree that it does make me also think of poetry. I also thought it was interesting what you brought up, too, about the school uniform thing, because I remember thinking about that when I was young, about how I kind of wish and kind of didn't wish that my school had uniforms. I mean, I went to a public school in the U.S., so, like, there's no school uniform. But I remember thinking it'd be nice if there were, because then nobody would be laughing, like, at anybody's clothes. Like, I didn't care, because I was pretty bold and not give a shit was kind of my mantra of my youth. But, excuse me, my siblings were definitely bothered. You know, my older brother was rather ashamed of not having clothes that were new or cool or fit properly. And my little sister was very social, so she always wanted what everyone else was wearing, and we just couldn't afford it. And she hated that. And worse is that she hated that she got my hand-me-downs, because we had very, very different senses of style. You know? So when I did manage to get the clothes I wanted, it was like pipe jeans and, like, oversized T-shirts and hoodies. And she wanted, like, the skin-tight low-rise jeans. But then I thought, too, about, like, well, it still wouldn't be great because, one, how would we afford them? So we probably wouldn't have very many, and they'd probably get really faded. And then it's, like, how do we wash them? You know, anyway, just thoughts about how that doesn't level the playing field as much as you'd think when you really think about it. And I spent way too much time thinking about it. So anyway.
No, I understand. My high school did have a uniform. I went to Catholic high school, and it's not as leveling as you think. Maybe financially it is, although I got used stuff, so you could kind of tell, but it also makes you very aware of, like, different body types. If everyone's wearing the same thing, I don't know, it's not as flattering on some as it is. You can't adjust accordingly to your body. I seem to recall being like, I don't know. I'm very curvy.
Yeah.
And even though I was thinner then, it just, I don't know. I was not happy with how it looked in the uniform. Especially because I bought things used, so they didn't fit very well.
I was pretty curvy in high school, too. A uniform probably would have been more revealing on me than I would have liked. Like I just said, I wore pipe jeans, oversized shirts. And that's because I was really buff. Well, I still am, but, like, I'm bigger all over. But, like, in high school, I wore size 3, but then I had to wear, like, size large and extra large tops. And then on my pants, later, I had to buy, like, size 11 because I had to get it over my hips, and then I had to take the waist in. So I don't think a school uniform would look very good. Like, I'd probably feel really self-conscious in high school because I just didn't like showing that much.
Exactly. Like, people acted like I was being slutty. I was wearing the same thing as everyone else. I can't help it.
If I'm dressed slutty, you're also dressed slutty. Just throwing that out there. Bunch of skanks in this school.
It was kind of ironic because I was probably like the least, but yeah, okay.
Yeah. Anyway. Poem from Daniel. Lots to think about.
A very great poem. Somehow that became Catholic uniforms being too small. We're awesome. Okay, I'm going to get you to read the next poem, please.
Absolutely. Oh, you know, I think we read this one. I remember thinking there's a lot of oceans.
Yes, you are right. Good memory, babbler. Okay. Next one here.
That was a very abbreviated summary of my thoughts.
No, you're right. I remember talking about the elements, and there was no earth. There was fire, and there was water, and there was, like, some other thing that I didn't realize was an element, and then there was no earth. I remember exactly.
Yeah. All right. So I think you put one up by Peter Solwyn. Is that the one you wanted me to read?
Yes, please.
All right. I'll go ahead and give that a read. Tobin's Einsteins by Peter Solwyn. Dull accountants in sleep's loose license to become such genius, figure out the speed of light, conduct the final ninth. Wake innocent of prized events, Nobel in line with rewards recipients, Pope water sprinkling, sirens going down. Oh, sing us a poem, fill us with sperm, give birth to a new world to come. Garbage truck of morning, a rude awakening, a life, figured existence of little meaning, famous farts all gone. End poem. Well, this is a really interesting write. I think it exemplifies some of the crassness that can have, and I mean that in a good way. Like, he's blunt. It's artfully crude, not to the best way to phrase it, but he certainly isn't shy in his writings. And when I read Beethoven's Einsteins, I think of geniuses, you know, but this kind of has a less flattering take on that, you know, that when they're asleep, there's geniuses figuring out the speed of light, conducting music, you know, they're heavily awarded, they're granted all of these prizes, and, you know, holy water spraying everywhere, just anointing everything. But that's all just like the dream and the fantasy. You know, they paint these wonderful worlds and they paint this fantastic story, but life kind of sucks. Garbage truck of morning, a reawakening, you know, it's all a dream, it's all a fantasy. You know, they're filling us with sperm, which I took as, like, ideas and seeds of knowledge and inspiration. But, you know, they're all dead and buried and long gone, and we're here, and we're not brilliant, and life kind of sucks. You know, there's no meaning to life, except to, like, fantasize and dream. So it's a kind of darker piece, you know, but I think it's an interesting take. So I enjoyed the write. I feel like it's one of Peter's shorter pieces, but I think it's well done. Your thoughts, Daisy, on it?
Well, I agree with a lot of what you said. I really liked that stanza, the third one, that has the fill us with sperm, which I agree with you is about, like, you know, impregnating us with ideas. And then we think that we're going to be able to make a whole new world with these ideas. And then that line that you pointed out, garbage truck of morning, that definitely has that kind of, like, you know, waking up to the sound of the garbage truck and realizing everything is garbage. It's just like the life is not quite as full of possibilities as you thought in your beautiful dream of, even though it says wake innocent of prized events. So it's like you didn't actually have these big events. You woke innocent of them. It didn't happen. Even, like, the good and the bad and the dirty and, like, all of it that you may have done in your mind, and you're innocent of that. The end too, the famous farts all gone. The old farts are no longer around, being geniuses and filling us with ideas. This is much shorter than he usually is, very succinct, but it's a lot to think about. And you're right, he has this intelligent crassness that's really interesting, because he doesn't necessarily say anything that is directly, well, Phyllis with sperm, I guess, is pretty direct, but there definitely are undertones of stuff, and I guess it's actually more than an undertone there. Okay, so I take back my, I was going to be like, he's subtle because it's so smart, but that's actually not subtle, so it was enjoyable.
It's almost like
though.
The intelligence of it. It's almost like the intelligence of it is subtle there, where the blunt crassness is bold. So,
yes. We have a new caller. Welcome, caller. Who do we have?
Hey, guys. Coincidentally, as you read my poem earlier, this is Dan DeChino calling in.
Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Hey, ladies.
Welcome.
I'm very excited to call. I'm a big fan of the show, and I'm never up at this time, but I woke up in the middle of the night and decided to give a call in.
Worked well for us.
And
do you
I do
any...
want to say from an earlier comment, Britney Spears was just wearing her Catholic school outfit as well, too, so I just wanted to put that out there.
Oh, yeah.
From your earlier comment, so.
I'm sure that met dress code. That was, one of those
yeah.
L.A. high schools, right?
Exactly.
I was actually in, grade 9, maybe grade 10, when she was, just becoming famous and was in that uniform. So I was in the
yes.
uniform at the time of that. We couldn't
uniforms
pretend
are very,
we were Britney.
Right. I'm sure. Uniforms are very funny. My son, who's really into, he does not like to wear what he doesn't want to wear, and he's into, free speech and all that. He went to a Catholic high school and made uniforms, and he actually liked them. It's kind of the same thing Babbler was saying about it kind of set a little bit of a level playing field, and it just, there's no logos, there's no gang signs, there's nothing. Everybody's just kind of, everybody's equal, as opposed to the jocks and the nerds and the whatever. It's just, I don't know, even he liked it. So I've become a fan of school uniforms, even though I'm a huge fan of free speech. So it's a weird thing. But I'm going backwards in your show because your show is so good. So if you want me to talk about, I'm going back. Half an hour now. Peter, I'm a big fan of Peter's. I like his stuff a lot. And I kind of agree with Babbler on this, where I think it's just trying to say that Einstein's Beethoven's are just people. I have this interesting book of essays by Einstein that he's just wrong on. He actually has a piece on there where he talks about how women can't do math because they're not as smart as men, and they never will be. And he goes to talk about other things too, and I'm like, he's just wrong. Some of these essays are stupid. I never thought I'd say that Einstein is stupid, but some of the essays he said, some of the theories were just bad. So he's just a guy, You got to realize that he's just a person, and he happens to be brilliant at math and have these great ideas, but. How many other just regular people walking down the street have brilliant ideas as well, too? I take my kid and I've gone to Comic-Cons and things like that for concerts and so forth. We got to meet a lot of celebrities, and part of why I did that at first was just to show him that these are just people. We'll sit there at Comic-Cons and be talking to some of these, really famous celebrities, and that's what I like about it is I don't usually, be the fanboy. I usually walk up and just start talking to them, and usually they really like that, and they just want to be a person, And I don't believe in the word genius. I don't really think there are any. I think it's a very overused word. I think we're all just people, and some people do have, you know, a little bit more talent than others, or have discovered, you know, other things or different ways to do things. But everyone has the potential of quote unquote genius. So that's what I got out of it. And I do like Peter's work a lot. So great job, Peter. And ladies, thank you for letting me, infiltrate your show tonight. I'm very excited.
Of course, you're always welcome. That was a great comment. Well, I might put you to work reading if you're up for it, Daniel.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So I should say that the next few are to the prompt. Things need not happen to be true. Tales and dreams are the shadow truths that will endure when mere facts are dust and ashes and forgot. Neil Gaiman. So I posted one by S. Sharp, if you'll read that for us.
Absolutely. I like Scott a lot. He's got a brand new book out. Everybody should go buy 100 copies and give them all their friends. I'm going to give Scott a little plug there. So yeah, he's a great poet. Of which I actually took the front cover picture of. He stole one of my pictures and put it on there, and I was very honored for that. So Scott's a good guy. This is called Under the Cloak of Nighttime by Scott Sharp. I close my eyes, spiraling into the darkness on the other side of the pillow, a world beyond, the nether of connected consciousness, the realm beyond responsibility, beyond feeling, where dreams have dreams, floating like clouds just above the horizon, like meaning over purpose, a place where truth is not subjective, and life is not contained by vision, hearing, or touch, a place where waking up doesn't change a thing. End poem.
Sorry about the delay there. My phone just decided to not respond to my finger. I'm trying to unmute myself and it's just ignoring me. Great read, Daniel. I really thought this was fascinating. It starts with, I close my eyes. So and then on the other side of the pillow. So I think of someone who's actually asleep, who's literally dreaming. You know, and they're talking about all of the things that happen in a dream where you're transported to another world, where your dreams have dreams, and there's layer and layer and layer. I love the concept of meaning over purpose, you know, where the importance of the dream and what the dream is saying is more important than what you're supposed to do with it. I do think that sometimes society especially is driven towards what's the purpose of a thing? What's it for? You know, even when you talk to people, it's, you know, you introduce yourself and people want to know, what do you do? You know, it's not like who you are, what are you interested in, it's what do you do? And to me, it kind of gets at that as a concept where you should consider the meaning of something and ponder over it, not just what is it, what are you going to use it for? You know, not everything's to be used. And then life is not contained by vision, hearing, or touch, a place where waking up doesn't change a thing. And those last two lines then make me think, okay, so then how do you know whether or not you're actually dreaming? If waking up didn't change anything, then it becomes like a cyclical thing. And then that almost takes me into like this Matrix-like concept or this, I can't think of Inception kind of concept where it's layered. You know, are we dreaming? You know, is this the highest level of reality? Like, what layer are we on now? Which gives it, I think, more of a philosophical tilt. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was well done. I like the kind of circular nature of the beginning and the ending lines. And there's something really romantic about the way they paint a dream. You know, it is a dreamy kind of language, you know, nether of connected consciousness, beyond responsibility. It's very fantastical and yet relatable. And it kind of, it's almost hypnotic, like soothing you into this idealist reality and then saying, you know, a place where even if you wake up, you're still there. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was beautiful, right? And there's something very romantic about it. Daniel, your thoughts?
Sure, and back to your comment, you know, when people, I agree with you, if people always ask that, what do? They don't care, like, hey, who are you, or what? Tell me about you. When people ask me what I do, most usually what I say is, most of the time, I don't know, because that's really the answer. Most of the time, I don't know what I'm doing. That's usually the answer. But I thought that, Scott's view was great. I do like Scott, so the more I read his stuff, the more I really like it. And I think he's just trying to figure out what dreams are. I still haven't figured them out yet. People always say that you're trying to figure things out. You know, I have this dream, if you will, of trying to find somebody that I'm connected to. My wife says that you know, she thinks people connect with each other. So anytime I dream about somebody, I always ask them, hey, what did you dream last night? I haven't found anybody yet that actually we had that same dream. I'm dying to find somebody that, like, we had the same dream, and that doesn't happen yet. I can't figure them out. I never have dreams that mean anything. Sometimes I'll dream about work if I was working all day. So am I still just – is still just in my head? My dreams never come true, like actual dreams. You know, I can't figure out why they're there. They don't never seem to really mean anything. So I think he's – trying to figure that out, and I think he has a beautiful, you know, lack of a better word, poetic way, romantic way, interesting way of just trying to figure them out. I close my eyes, I spiral into darkness on the other side of the pillow, like you're not in your body anymore. You're some other world, a world beyond, like he says. Another of connected consciousness, a realm beyond responsibility. So he's just saying you're just in this other world, and whatever happens kind of happens. And that's almost what I think dreams are. I think they might just be your mind kind of processing things, or just kind of, you know, you're moving the information around in your head. You know, you look at studies of the mind when you're sleeping, it's almost, I believe, more active than it is when you're awake. So your mind's almost like just getting everything, putting it places or whatever it's doing. So, very, very interesting and beautiful way of trying to describe that, almost a scientific way, but making it very poetic and beautiful. So great job, Scott. Really enjoyed it. Hope that made all sense. I don't know. Just trying to think as I go here.
I think it's good. Yeah. No, excellent comments. I love what you said about your own dreams. I myself am a very vivid dreamer. I have crazy dreams, very detailed dreams. And I write them down a lot because they're really long and weird. Now, for like what they mean, I've never had a dream like mean something so much as it's just usually kind of odd and wild. Although very recently, and I'm only mentioning this because you talked about like dream connect and this kind of a thing, I had a dream about a celebrity, and we went and we had this picnic in a park, and he told me to give him a book recommendation, give him a book that says something about me. Something really important, and not to forget to give him the book and to think about it. And then and this was back in June, and then just last week he came out with a book of pictures of himself in a park that looks just like my dream, that's called Me, Myself, and I, a book that says something about me. I've been losing my mind for like the last week because I'm like, really? This is weird. Really,
you know, I would say you should tell this person that, but they're just gonna think you're insane. So,
right, they're gonna think I'm some kind of weirdo. Yeah, they're not
that's,
wrong.
That's
I am a weirdo, but I'm not that.
I was gonna say that. I'm glad you did. I was like, they're gonna think the truth.
You know, like I'm not some weird internet stalker. You know, and this is a celebrity, so it's not like, you know, some random
right.
person. But anyway.
But then again, if you started with, by the way, I'm some weird internet, if you start off with even that sentence, right? But I'm not, listen, first of all, I'm not a weird internet stalker, but, like, yeah, that's the,
As soon as someone says that, I stop.
Right. Listen, first of all, I'm not crazy, okay?
Dot, dot, dot.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's very interesting. You need to buy the book.
Oh, yeah, I already put in a pre-order. How could I not?
There was a sign. Come on.
Exactly.
I literally dreamt of the book. Like, I have to have it, right? So, anyway. Liliana, do you want to hear your thoughts on the poem?
Yes. I really enjoyed this. When it says spiraling into the darkness on the other side of the pillow, I had this really, like, clear visual of this mirror world. It's sort of like you see the reflection, and it's like in the book, it's all upside down version of what's up, except when one person, the one on top, goes to sleep, the one on the bottom wakes up, and it's like this mirror image but different world where there's not the same, like, laws of gravity and just, like, it's just, it's more free in the secondary world. And I had, like, this vision of it when I heard that part. I just loved it. I like that meaning over purpose. I think that's a good thing to aim for. And then the part that I found was interesting is in the dream, there's no vision or hearing or touch. And for me, my dreams are kind of the opposite. Because of my brain damage, for a while I didn't have very good senses. My sense of touch, my vision was really bad. So my dreams were the place where I actually could see and feel and do all the things. So it's kind of the opposite. It's like that's where it was vibrant. So I just kind of infused my own personal stuff in there when I was reading it, but I find this really interesting, and now I want to think more about that mirror world of the dreaming. I feel like there's a story in there.
That idea of the mirror world. I mean, it, of course, makes me think of the upside down. my name sometimes is Stranger Things. Like, God, my ability to recall names sometimes. I'm worried about myself, guys. but I like that concept, you know, like when you're awake, the other you is dreaming. I always thought that was an interesting take on dreaming. So, excellent comment. Where are we off to now?
I'm going to read one by Blue Harrison. And this one is to the same prompt. Never mind. Okay. So, A Hug of Seconds by Blue Harrison. And now I have to go away. Your tongue-sanded skylines can only hold me tenacious. Seconds. Though I'd rather run current and thirsted after, that is not a seamed reality. I have to go away. I've lived long the ridges your eyes have always looked up to and have twined fingers during that twilight fever when you needed something imagined to come through. Now you are older and cloud so many lights onto far skies. Fragile, settled, my lamb, you walk the hills one to the next and this is your rest. Bells softly held to night's breast. And you know I'll come to nestle, bring my sleeves of many shades for you to nuzzle, till the morn presses horn to kiss of blushing mount, and you surrender to shudders of sheep without staff. I have to go away. End poem.
Lovely read, Faziana. I really, there's a softness to this piece that I thought was beautiful. And A Hug of Seconds, you know, just a brief hug. And yet it feels both drawn out and short in the piece. For me, this seems like a poem to a child, you know, that's growing up that growing up so fast, you know, and yet so slow, and knowing you have to, like, withdraw in order for them to continue growing, and how that's both a moment of pride and it's bittersweet, you know. There's some really beautiful lines in here. You know, now you are older and cloud, so many lights onto far skies. Just a beautiful way to say, like, that you've grown, that you've spread, that, you know, the little landscape you once occupied has kind of grown into this massive place. I thought was beautifully done. And then, my lamb, you walk the hills one to the next, and this is your rest. Bells softly held tonight's breast. You know, the exploring lamb, you know, out traversing the countryside, and then coming back, you know, for the night. And that does, I never really thought about it before, but that really does mimic well, you know, being a kid. You know, when you're really little, at least when I was really little, you know, you spend all day, every day with your parents, and then you get older and you go to school and come home, and then you get a little older and you go to school and you go to your friends' houses and you come home, and, you know, and you get a little older than that and you move out and go to college or whatever you're going to do, and then you just come for holidays. You know, like, it is kind of this distance growth, and it kind of is like a lamb in that way, the going out and coming back. I thought it was beautifully done. You can feel a lot of love in this piece and a lot of warmth, just tinged with that kind of bittersweet letting go, but it has pride in it. I thought it was a beautiful piece from Blue Hair. Your thoughts, Tiziana?
I really like your interpretation. I think that works well, having it be about the child. I also felt like it kind of mirrored, like, the moon going through the sky. And I'm trying to find, like, why I thought that, but I was really picturing, like, the different parts of night quickly going by. Like, even now you're older and cloud so many lights into far skies, it's like once the night is, like, deeper into the night, it's more visible because the rest of the world has kind of gone dark and you can see. I definitely prefer your metaphorical view, but I also had, like, this more literal view of it. And then I kind of thought that dreams hug you only for a second. It's like you try to hold on to them and they slip away. I liked the line, "I've lived the long ridges your eyes have always looked up to and twined fingers." I don't even totally understand, but I really enjoy that part. It's just worded so, like, intricately. I really like it. Yeah, thank you, Blue, for sharing.
Interesting. Your interpretation is very different than mine, but I like that as well. You know, it's almost like a nightly brief, like, romance with the moon. It's an intriguing take. Thanks for sharing. Your thoughts, Daniel?
I was thinking kind of on the same lines of Faziana, where this is, you know, I like Blue Harrison a lot. She writes for my show, my and Bobby's show, lately, and I've been becoming a fan of hers. And I think this is kind of a love affair, but in a couple of ways. It's a love affair with dreams, with the dream world, and possibly also a love affair with this person that she's with in the dream world. And she's talking to them, and is my interpretation, just saying, you know, he has all these magical things that we're doing. He has all this stuff that we've been through. But I have to go now. I have to basically wake up. I'm leaving you. I'm leaving this world. And it's just so beautiful the way she wrote it. And you can just see the detail. You know, our minds are amazing things. I think I've dreamt full songs that I've basically written in my head. Like I've woken up before and like there's just this song that I just wrote, like the whole thing, every instrument, everything, like the words just in real time almost. I've done that with almost stories, you know, and I don't think it's me doing it. It's your mind just kind of doing things, and you can get so detailed. I think dreams are a window into the possibilities that the mind can actually do, and how detailed they could be. And she's kind of on there, like she's really into this world and this either this person or showing all the different stanzas of everything that can possibly happen, but you know, saying, you know, I have to go away. So there's such a dreamlike state to this, but then a sadness and a loving to this. So I thought this was really amazing because there's just so much going on here. I really enjoyed it, and again, I'm a fan of Blue Harrison. I think she's a fantastic poet.
I like that version too. the nightly kind of interaction with a dream. But, you know, it is a dream, not reality. It's just kind of a goodbye to fantasies, yet not goodbye forever, goodbye till tomorrow night almost.
Really you can, you know, I'm sorry, Babbler, go ahead, please.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and you know, the thing about dreams that's weird is you can, you know, you can dream something that's like years long, and you're literally only dreaming for, you know, 30 seconds, or you can dream something that's really quick, and you were dreaming for an hour, you know. So you can get so detailed and so, you know, time almost doesn't matter when you're in your dreams, and you can kind of see that in her poem there, where she's getting very involved in this world or this person that she's talking to. So it's, I'm not sure again if she's talking to a specific person or she's talking just to her dreams in general, but interesting.
I like that you said that, yeah. The whole thing about how you can imagine so much that it's like a whole lifetime. I used to have a reoccurring dream that I had kids. They were twins, and it's like I got so attached to these kids because I saw like their whole life, and then I wake up and I'm like, they're not here. it was really upsetting because I felt like they were mine. And then I had for like 10 years I had dreams about this guy who was not a real guy, and actually my novel Parallel Punches is basically that combination of dreams about this guy, this mysterious guy, Alex. The book is about him and trying to find him because, I don't know, there's some part of my subconscious that's always trying to find him. He's missing, but he's not real. So it's interesting how that can work, is like the time shift. And I guess that's sort of what Inception was about, that Babbler you mentioned earlier. It's like getting lost within the dream, within the dream, within a dream.
All right, now I'm going to have to push it up a phase, Yana. Your book is on my bookshelf. I own it. It's literally on my list to write, but now you've intrigued me. I have to push it up and read it. I have so many books I haven't read that are on my list, and yours is on there. It's up there, so I'm going to have to read it sooner than later. So that sounds intriguing.
You'll get cool. to find out my mystery Alex, the guy from my dreams. Well, the thing is, my book is basically a whole bunch of my dreams mashed together, so hopefully it'll make sense to you.
Interesting. Yes, I will let you know.
Thank you.
My recurring dreams have never been good.
No.
No. Like, I had a recurring dream when I was very small, from earlier than before I can remember. And I would wake up screaming, and then as I became more able to talk, it was pretty clear that my dream was about dying in a house fire. I was stuck in my bedroom, and I couldn't get out of the door, and the room was filling up with smoke, and I was banging on my window, and I could see the firemen outside, but they either didn't see me or didn't know I was there and never looked over to me. And then the room got really, really hot, and my pajamas melted onto my skin, and then my skin kind of boiled off, and then I'd wake up. I had that dream, like, almost every night until I was about 5 or 6.
Wow.
That is awful.
Not a good dream.
No.
But not a good dream.
Poor young babbler.
Yeah. Yeah, and I wasn't me in the dream. I was, like, a like, 8-year-old girl in the dream. I wasn't myself. And then later
I was
another
the only one who did that. I'm never myself in my dreams.
Oh, no, I'm never myself.
Oh, really?
I'm rarely myself.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I'm rarely
That's very
myself.
Interesting. The only recurring dream, I know I've had a couple of recurring dreams here and there. The one I always remember, I don't know why, it was when I was a little kid too, 4 or 5 years old, was I'm running down my street that I lived on, and I am me, and I'm running down there, and I'm walking, and this monster comes around the corner, this like monster, like people-sized, and comes after me, so I'm running, so now I'm scared, and the monster's after me, but he comes up to me, and he taps me on the shoulder and goes, look, and points behind me, and there's a bigger monster coming. So I turn and keep running. We keep running. That monster catches up to me, taps me on the shoulder, and says, look, and a bigger monster's coming. It just keeps going like that till like bigger, 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 bigger until I wake up. And I had that recurring dream, and I still remember it from like I was like 4. And they just kept going. Bigger and bigger, bigger monsters would catch up to me, tap me on the shoulder, and say, look. And then a bigger monster would come and just never stop. And I had that multiple times, and I have no idea why. I still remember it as vivid as anything in my youth. I still remember it. I don't know why. And why do we have recurring dreams? Because they're so – you wake up and they're so in your mind, you're just, like, remembering them. Recurring dreams are definitely an interesting thing. But –
yeah, I had a recurring dream that happened later, like when I was a teenager, I was at a gas station. Again, not me. I was like an older black man in this dream. And I'd come to the gas station, and I could walk in, and I could do whatever I wanted. It was like, I can't think of the word of it, but when you can do whatever you want in your dream. And there was a little boy that was like in this toy car thing in the parking lot. And at the end of every dream, he would flip his toy car and crack his head open and, like, die. And I knew the goal of the dream was to, like, get the kid to not die. And so I had to, like, try everything over and over and over again. And I ended up stopping having that recurring dream after, like, beat the living shit out of one of the people at the gas station. I mean, I just, like, beat the crap out of them. And then the police showed up and arrested me. And then the kid didn't die in the car thing. But that was a weird dream. I had that one quite a few times in high school.
Well, you
wow, that's like
dark,
a Groundhog
dark,
Day situation.
Dark over there. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like we need
like
a therapist
like
to be here and analyze our dreams for us.
I write a lot of mine down because I wake up and I'm like, well, that was wild. So I have a whole thing of just where I write down my dreams in the morning.
I kind of want to read your dream journal.
They're pretty crazy dreams. But anyway. Excellent, excellent write. Lots of thoughts provoking talking about dreams tonight and the wonderful poem from Blue Harrison. I would love to hear her thoughts on it, like her intention behind it.
Yes. Blue, if you're listening, we want to know. There's one by Damn It Dave, if you'll read that for us, Babbler.
Absolutely. This is just a dream. A dream is just a dream. It isn't real, I tell myself when waking in a sweat. My brain believes it was a true ordeal, and I have been wakened by the threat. That dreams aren't made of matter doesn't matter. My racing pulse confirms that they exist. And though those dreams may quickly, very quickly scatter, they're real before they vanish in the mist. The imagery that dances while I slumber is genuine as long as I'm asleep. If nightmares come and seem to have my number, the scars they leave can carve me pretty deep. A dream's not just a dream if it projects a theme that leaves emotional effects. end poem. I believe this is in sonnet format, so we've got a nice formatted, with really great rhyme and a really good flow. I'm terrible at knowing whether or not it's actually metered. That was just something I never mastered. But it feels like it is. And I love the concept. And I mean, the title hits it kind of on the nose, you know, just a dream. Okay, so, you know, if it's just a dream, then why does it feel so real? Like, why are there after effects? You know, why do you awake in a sweat? Why is your pulse racing? You know, why can they leave scars? Why can they affect you even when you're not dreaming? So it's not just a dream, because it kind of comes over into reality. You know, there's something real about the dream because there's overflow, which is kind of an interesting concept. It almost makes me think of like a Freddy Krueger kind of thing, you know, where it's like just below the surface, just waiting, you know, thin veil, just waiting to be sliced open between dreams and reality. And they do bubble over. Like, I had a dream that I knew how to French braid when I was like 17 or 18. I did not know how to French braid, but I had this dream that I did, and I remembered very well how I did it in the dream. And I woke up and I tried it, and sure enough, I now know how to French braid. I had no idea how to do it before I had a dream about it. So, I mean, it definitely does have effects on reality. I mean, dreams are real. They do happen. We know that people dream. So I like the concept. You as well, Doug. Your thoughts, Daniel?
Yeah, I thought this is really well done. Definitely, even though I don't write it enough, I need to write more. I'm a big fan of lyrical rhyming poetry, and I think this is great. I don't know either exactly what the specific, you know, why is this meter good or not? And to be honest, I don't really want to learn too many rules about, you know, by far an amateur poet, and I don't want to learn the rules. I just want to enjoy it. And so to me, it's like when I'm a drummer, or if I'm learning odd times, I try not to sit there and count. I try to just look at the feel. So to me, I thought he did a great job because the feel was great. You know, the imagery that dances while I slumber is genuine as long as I'm asleep. If nightmares come and seem to have my number, the scars they leave can carve me pretty deep. You know, that just flows beautifully. I thought he did a great job with the rhyming. And I think this is really that, just a dream, that moment, right? When you wake up, I believe that you only dream during your REM sleep. So if you wake up, if you remember your dreams, you actually didn't have a good night's sleep, because you're supposed to go through the cycle, and then you have this little kind of time of waking up, and then you wake up. So if you wake up during, and you remember your dreams, you're waking up during the time when you're deep asleep, and you shouldn't do that. So there's always that little moment when you awake, and you're not really sure, like, maybe it's even 1 second or 2 seconds where you're like, wait a minute, is that real? Like, am I a dream? Or have you ever been in the dreams when you wake yourself up, like you realize during the dream that it's a dream, and then you wake up, but there's always that moment when you're really not sure, is this real or is this a dream? And I think he captured that beautifully. I believe that's what, or at least what I got out of it, was that's what this is about. And then those dreams, like the ones that you were talking about, Babbler, you know, that they can affect you. You know, they're so, especially when you're a little kid, they can be, you know, you don't know what's happening, so they can actually affect you personally. And then it does cease to become a dream, because it's actually, whatever it was is affecting your real life when you're awake. So now it's not just a dream, it's actually something in your life. And to say all that in a little brevity and make it beautifully rhymed is really a talent. So awesome job, Dave. Appreciate the write.
Yeah, great comment. I agree with you on knowing forms particularly well. I mean, part of the reason I don't know meter very well is because I don't care to know meter very well. You know, I don't really care when I'm reading a poem about counting syllables. you know, does it flow well? Does it sound good? You know, was I tripping up on words? Did it give it a rhythm? I really care more about that than, like, counting. you know, maybe there's form sticklers out there. Not maybe. I know there are, but I'm not one of them. I share a page with you. I like knowing some of the terminology, but overall, I care more about the enjoyment of the piece.
Well, yeah, there's that scene, and, you know.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I think there's a delay on my side. I was gonna say in the that movie, Dead Poets Society. I'm sure you guys have probably seen that older movie. There's that scene where they're reading the book, How to Enjoy the chapter, How to Enjoy Poetry. You know, in order to enjoy poetry, you must understand these things. And he's just ripped that out. So I just thought that was an interesting scene of, you know, how to enjoy poetry. You just read it and you tell if you can enjoy it. You know. When I was younger, I mean, I was so into music. I still kind of am. I decided when I was young, like 22 years old, I was going to write a book, like write almost a textbook on rhythm. And I started writing it, and I stopped because it started taking the magic out of it for me, honestly. I said, you know what? I don't want to understand why I like rhythm and why rhythm is – I just want to enjoy music. I want that to still be a magical part of my life that I'm not analyzing. So I literally stopped writing the book. For that reason. And, you know, so there's that, you know, you want to understand what you're doing. You want to have a technique, right? You certainly want to understand your craft, but you don't want to take the magic out of it and make it just, you know, methodical, right? So, yeah, I thought that was an interesting comment you made, Valora. That's what made me think of.
Yeah. Just riffing off yours.
Oh.
No. Excellent comment. Aphasiana, your thoughts?
Well, I agree with you both about the meter. Like, I don't like to actually count the syllables. I feel that takes the magic out of it. But I love it when it is right and it just feels right, as long as it's not forced. The reason why I don't actually do it, I tend to not write something like a sonnet, is because I end up focusing so much on the form that my message is lost, because I'm just trying to get the right amount into the line, and then I lose it, and it doesn't feel as, like, genuine, because it's not, because I'm trying to fit it in. But I think Damn It Dave is really good at making it so it's not lost. Like, he has the rhymes, it feels like the meter, but it's not forced. It doesn't seem like he's choosing words just to fit in the syllables or just to rhyme. It flows and it makes sense, and it just it keeps its feeling. And I think that's really challenging, to have both that rawness of thought and the structure. I've never been able to do both, and so I respect people who can. And I think that he's mastered that, where he can make the structure work, but also keeps, like, the authenticness, the authenticity of the poem itself. I liked the line, "The dreams aren't made of matter." That dreams aren't made of matter doesn't matter, because he uses matter in two ways, and I like playing on words that sound the same but have different meanings. I thought that worked really nicely. He definitely has mastered getting the story out without losing it in the format, but keeping the format, and I'm envious of that.
I agree. I think he does a really great job at making it natural and not putting the form over the message. And I think I've read several of his pieces that fit a structured form, but do it in a way that isn't detrimental to the message or even, like, impinging on it at all. I think Sam and Dave is actually really good at that. Excellent. Excellent comment. What do we want to do now, Faziana?
So we're going to do one of your contests. You have two on the board here. Which one do you want to do?
Let's do the first book one first. I believe that's the one I posted on there first.
Yes. So, okay, can you explain the contest?
Yes. So this contest was titled First Book. So I've been just kind of thinking about literacy in general lately. I read this article about reading And the percentage of people that read a book after high school and the percentage of people that read a book after college. I think it's 33% of high school graduates in the U.S. will never read another book. And 41% of college graduates will never read another book. And that just made me feel really sad. And it made me start reading again, even though, and maybe look at like the three books that I read last year and be like, oh man, I need to get back into this because I used to read a lot. I have less time lately, but it had me thinking about that. And then that got me into thinking about all of the books that I had read. And it brought me back to the Dick and Jane books that were my dad's that I actually learned to read from. I was really little when I learned to read. I don't remember learning to read, but I do remember reading these books over and over again. And just the way they made me feel and the illustrations and the stories and the smell of the binding. It's just kind of an ingrained part of my childhood that's never left me. So for this contest, I had asked for people to tell me about a book from their childhood and the ways that it affected them or made them feel or something inspired by that first book that they recall. You know, whether or not it's the first one they read or the one they had read to them all the time, but just an early iconic piece of literature from their childhood. So that was the prompt for this contest.
Excellent. Well, as a librarian, this is kind of like near and dear to me because I'm specifically a children's librarian. So I read to kids of all ages, really, starting when they're babies until, you know, high school. And I help people pick out books, and I'm, you know, super into children's literacy. And it makes me so sad to hear the statistics, even though I kind of know them, about the adults not reading, except I see such a skewed sampling because, I mean, like, we're always super busy, and I see so many adults who read and all different kinds of reading. So it's still out there. It's just, I guess, statistically low, but I definitely see that it's still a thing. I don't know if our stats are much different in Canada, but probably not, sadly. I don't know. It's still a thing for a lot of people. My librarian heart cries at the low statistics. anyway, I love this contest, and I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to write for it. But I'm going to put up the one by Blues Man, because I think that might be a fun start. Daniel, would you read that for us, please?
Yes, let's do it. So by Blues Man. See Dick Drink. See Dick Drink. See Dick Drive. See Dick Die. Don't be a dick. Don't drink and drive. And poem.
Great read. Sorry, I'm chuckling. It just feels very comical, you know, to take the format of the old Dick and Jane books, which really do kind of follow this format. I mean, there's a reason it's a book that I read when I was really little, because these sentence structures really are like this. It's like, see Dick run, see Dick jump, you know. And so to take it and then make Dick not a child but an adult, you know, and put him in this situation of drunk driving. I mean, it's kind of dark, but it's also comical, especially from the sense that, like, most of the people who learn to read from Dick and Jane books are older now. You're talking, you know, baby boomers, maybe even a little older than baby boomers. I think Dick and Jane books, what is that, like the 40s? I'm not sure exactly when they came out. But to take that and make Dick a drunk driver. And then especially when you consider, too, that Dick is kind of a euphemism for, like, an asshole, you know. Don't be a dick is, you know, don't be a jerk, you know, don't be a dipshit. And then he even puts that one in quotes, but it's already kind of implied before the quotes. You know, see Dick drink, see Dick drive. You know, give it this message, don't drink and drive. Take, like, this kid's book that's usually, like, harmless and playful and make it into, like, a PSA for drunk driving while mimicking the format. You know, it's just kind of a comical brevity. Aphesiana, your thoughts?
Yeah, the Dick and Jane books are from, like, the 30s to 60s. So definitely their main audience are all grown up now. They still exist, but I don't know. I kind of think they're terrible early readers because they don't speak in a way that people actually speak, and that doesn't teach the best sentence structure and also isn't very exciting for the kids. but I think that that he captured the structure of it very well, you know, had a fun twist on it, and making, like, classic children's books into adult jokes is, like, really popular right now. The bad thing is people keep shelving them in the wrong spot because, like, we have, there's, like, the, like, you know, there's Goodnight Moon, but then there's, like, adult versions of it, and then there's, like, the Go to Fuck to Sleep book, and things like that. Like, yeah. There's lots that are, like, for the adults who, are, you know, going a little stir crazy reading children's books over and over and over again. And it's actually, like, a popular, like, subgenre right now. It's like the parents having a joke kind of books. And I think this is one that could work like that. And good message of don't drink and drive.
Yeah, I mean, the overarching theme is good. That's hilarious that all those new children's books. So I know exactly what you're talking about. The first thing that came to my mind was the Go to the Fuck to Sleep book. But I can see that being misfiled in the wrong area. If you're at the library checking out books, it's not necessarily the one you want your kid to bring to you. Like, Mommy, can you read this?
The thing is, if you watch the video, Samuel L. Jackson has a video of him reading it, and it's classic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It was designed for Samuel L. Jackson to read it. I feel like when it was written with him in mind. So
yeah,
I'm super glad that they did, in fact, get him to read that. I love it. But a great comment and wonderful insight into the library conundrum. Daniel, your thoughts?
I did not know those type of books exist. Now I'm going to have to go look them up. Absolutely. First of all, what you guys were talking about before, it is, I don't think reading is going away, but it's definitely not like it used to be, and just because of electronic things, just like most other forms of entertainment, even just people learning, you know, how to play musical instruments, even just the lost art of conversation is going away just because of the electronic age. So I am sad. I hope you know, I'm seeing bookstores go away. Barnes & Nobles are closing all over the place. Like, you don't see bookstores like you used to, and it's, you know, I understand people doing Kindles. It's just not the same to me. So it does scare me. I hope that you know, doesn't keep going away. But yeah, I thought this was great. And what I'm actually going to comment on this is I think that this website that we have here of All Poetry has some of the most amazing minds like I've ever seen here. He was, you know, Bluesman was trying to make something, you know, funny, which it was. It was funny, and it was interesting, and he just, you know, made a parody of, obviously, the Dick and Jane books. But there's a comment on there that you should send this into a national campaign. It's simple and catchy. It's what they need. And I actually agree with that. I think this is a little bit of a microcosm of the talent that's on here. You know, you mentioned before about, you know, Aphesiana, about, you know, the ability of some of the poets here to be able to do these rhymes and do these different styles. And I agree. I mean, I'm humbled every single day when I'm on here reading this stuff, like reading some, you know, people who are real poets and just the talent that's on here, and him, you know, Bluesman, just trying to just create something funny to me, created something that you know, a campaign might spend hundreds of thousands of dollars of professional ad people to make. Like, that's the talent of writing that's on here. So as simple and fun as this is, you know, this is a you know, this could actually be used for that as well too. And I want to give L.A. Poe on her comment a little shout out, because she said, yes, drinking and driving is ridiculous. I like puns, so I want to throw that out there too. Anyway, nice job, Blues Man. That was fun.
Yeah, I completely agree. This really could be an anti-drinking campaign, and like in a commercial or some kind of actual PSA. Because I don't think the Dick and Jane books are, you know, out, like, unknown, you know, especially the targets would, I think, you know, be a slightly older generation. But I don't think that the comedy of it would be lost. And it's a very direct message. And even if you're not familiar with the Dick and Jane books, there's still those memes that are out there that are like, be like Sally. You know, like, Sally doesn't stick her nose in other people's business, and Sally doesn't call the police on black people having a barbecue. Be like Sally. And I think it fits kind of like in that vein. I really, you know, it's short and simple, but I think that's the beauty of it. Like, I really do think it could be used easily for like an actual, you know, successful anti-drunk driving campaign that would stick in people's heads. Excellent comment. Athesiana, your thoughts?
Didn't I already talk? No?
Maybe. Maybe, I don't remember.
I think I did.
We're all talking. Anyway. I thought, for some reason, I thought I read it and then it was Daniel, but quite possibly, no, I think you did, because you talked about the library.
Yeah.
Nope. In the books. My brain just scattered. No. So, what poem do we have up next?
We have one by Jesna Sajan, and I'll read this. It's called Little Women by Louisa May Alcott. A story of a family loved by children, young adults alike, were kind by each one of different characters, love, respect, togetherness, bind. Everyone for each other, love, respect, happiness combined. Each other worked the best of their duty, what they were assigned. Readers become better children, better parents, best of mankind. A novelist, Louisa May Alcott, gave us Little Women, neatly streamlined. Little Women are four March sisters, Meg, Jo, Beth, and Amy, from childhood to womanhood with their mother, Marmy. In a new neighborhood of Massachusetts, in genteel poverty, their father lived far from home, chaplain for the Union Army. Marmy and her daughters gave away Christmas breakfast in basket sway. An impoverished family with Christmas breakfast tray, wealthy, elderly neighbor Mr. Lawrence sent that, received surprise dinner in return for their breakfast. May families become friends with acts of kindness stay. Meg, traditionalist, and Joe, tomboy, works for the family to pay. Meg tutors a nearby family of four children, a place far away. Joe assists her aged great-aunt March, wealthy widow at Plumfield. Beth, too timid, content to stay at home with housework and the field. A peacemaker, pianist, got scarlet fever when poor family get healed. Amy is materialistic, an artist, wants elegance and fine society revealed. Neighbor boy, Lori, orphaned grandson of Mr. Lawrence concealed. His feelings for Amy was close friends with sisters Joe appealed. Joe is a novelist, frustrated with editing, cannot face critical response.
Meg with rich friends, attend parties, dance with boys, renaissance. Meg's friends misunderstand Meg loves Lori. We're in a trance. While she loved John Brooke, Lori's young tutor, by chance, Amy is sent to live with Aunt March, replaces Joe to nurse Beth's dance. Beth recovers, but she remains sick, leaves sadness, case of mischance. Mr. March was ill with pneumonia. Marmy nursed him in Washington. She refused Mr. Lawrence's offers to accompany her. Travel is not done. John Brooke is sent for business in Washington. Help marches a ton. He confesses his love for Meg to her parents. He waited and love won. Brooke joins the military, serves the war. He is wounded by gun, returns to find work, to buy a house, gets ready to marry Meg. It's done. End poem.
Great read, Ephesiana. The rhyme in this is really tight, you know. It starts with a little bit of introduction, you know, kind of like what they loved about it, you know, that reading makes better children, better parents, and the best of mankind. And then it kind of goes into just like a synopsis of the book, you know, like what happened in the book Little Women. You know, just, it almost is like just this, like an extremely abridged version. Although I did notice at the end it says that you know, the romance confusion was between Meg and Lori. I'm pretty sure it was Joe, as I remember reading this book as well. But I do, you know, she doesn't clearly remember the book very well to give it like her own shortened version. So instead of Cliff Notes, we've got Jesna Sojan's notes on Little Women. But the rhyme scheme was really good, and the flow is really good as well. And it really does a great job of very, you know, shortening it up on about the book. So clearly it had an impression on Jesna to remember it so well. Your thoughts, Daniel?
I thought it was really interesting, almost like a poetic rhyming book report. The whole time I was thinking, like, if I was an English teacher, I would tell people to do book reports, but I would tell them to do it like this: do a book report or rhyme every line together, or do it that way, because I thought it was interesting. But it's a love affair to this, you know. I try to think of myself as like a manly guy, but I will admit I've read Little Women. I really liked it. I'm a big fan of Jane Austen. You know, I think a good book is a good book. And this obviously had, I think she did your prompt beautifully, because this is a book that had a great effect on her, and she just did a loving tribute to it, is I think really what she did, just really making it poetic, and the rhymes were spot on, like you said, and I think you can just feel her passion of how much she enjoyed it, and these characters are just you know, inside her and changed her. You know, we do all have those books like that. I wish I could have written for this, because I certainly have books when I was a kid that, you know, were this magical kind of a thing that you're discovering. I remember even in high school when I first really discovered science fiction, it was just this amazing, you know, taking me places I just could have never dreamed of before. And that could be some of it too. You know, when I was, I mean, I'm older than both of you by a long shot, I think. You know, and I remember when science fiction was just this horrible, cheesy, you know, special effects. You couldn't really, you had to, like, you're watching a movie and you literally had to use your imagination to watch the movie, because you had to like pretend, okay, this really is a monster, or this really is a spaceship, even though you clearly know it's not. And the movies that are out there now, are the special effects are so amazing. It's just, it looks just as much real as, you know, watching a situation comedy. I mean, it just, they're amazing now. To me, that those science fiction and fantasy novels are the things that really took me to places I could actually really imagine these crazy things. So that, you know, it means something to you, and I think by reading this, I can see how much, you know, Jesna, this just Jesna, excuse me, this you know, really meant a lot to her and affected her. So I thought she did a fantastic job. And that was a great read, Afasiana. I always like your readings.
Yeah, you can tell that it's like a touchstone memory kind of book based on the detail. I love your idea of giving book reports as like rhyming poetry. I think I would have had a lot more fun writing book reports if I'd been able to do that. Not that everyone loves writing poetry, but I imagine it'd been more fun for me to listen to them and also to try and write one if I had to give it some kind of format like that versus just a really boring expository piece of writing.
You guys are making me reflect on my youth now, and I remember this one when I was in, like, I think it was third grade. We had to do a book report. We basically had to do a chapter, like, of, you know, you had to, like, come up with a it was like a paragraph for each chapter. It was in third grade. So stupidly me, I don't know why I did this, I picked 2001 A Space Odyssey in third grade to read. And his chapters are, like, 2 pages long. He even has a chapter that's 1 paragraph long. So in third grade, I vividly remember sitting there for, like, it took me, like, an entire weekend. And it took me forever to do it as a little kid because I had to write one. You know, instead of picking, like, a 5-chapter book, like, you know, Robinson Crusoe or whatever it was, you know, I picked this one that had, like, 45 chapters. And it just took me forever. I don't know why. I just vividly remember that about book reports, and I've hated them ever since. It was a great book. I loved it even back
yeah.
then. I thought I like Stanley Kubrick. It's very confusing. The book is fantastic. It's phenomenal. I love Arthur C. Clarke, and like I said, I remember even going up to the teacher, and she felt bad for me. I even asked her. I said, "This chapter's only 1 paragraph long. What do I?" She said, "Just copy it. Just get it done, Dan. You're fine." she felt bad for me. So anyway, that's my book.
Like a space odyssey when you're that young, that is ambitious. But Arthur C. Clarke is brilliant.
Yes.
I did an oral on him once. We had to do like write like an essay and then present it orally once a year. And I wrote about how he came up with things before they were actual things, like satellite dishes. That we use for everything now. He came up with it in a story, and it ended up becoming real because scientists read his story and were like, we could do that. He has a few different things like that where his writing actually led to things, and I, like, totally geeked out on that, and I was presenting it to the class, and everyone else was looking at me like I was totally crazy, and they're like, okay, why are you talking about this? I don't know. Cool.
I think I was in third or fourth grade, and we were told to pick any book that we wanted to write a book report on, and I did Isaac Asimov's Black Holes. Let me tell you that a heavy-duty nonfiction science book was not a popular choice. Like, I enjoyed it immensely. I could see all of my classmates zoning out. I was very fascinated and excited to share all this information about black holes and red dwarfs and all kinds of astronomical information with people. Nobody cared. Nobody cared. Not to mention it was like a really above most people in my class reading level, but yeah, it was fun. Afasiana, your thoughts on the poem?
I like the beginning the best when it's more like her opinion, because I like that she talks about how it makes people better children, better parents, become the best of mankind, because that's one of the wonderful things about books is they help create empathy. They help you understand other people's situations to learn about how these various characters are feeling can make you think about different people and their experiences. The sisters are all so different from each other, and yet they get along. They have these wonderful bonds. They help each other. I mean, like, yeah, they have little, like, fights and stuff, but generally it's a pretty uplifting kind of story, and it makes people
think about, you know, ways that they could be kind, ways that they could make those connections and appreciate people for the different types of people that they are. So I actually thought that this was really great. And for its time, it was fairly feminist, like Joe being so independent and being a writer and all of that. I mean, like, now I wouldn't consider it, you know, as forward thinking, but at the time it was, you know, kind of groundbreaking in perspective of the different women and their interests. So I thought that it was a positive message, and I like that she recognized the impact that the story could have on people and that it had on her.
I really think that first part where she talks about what it means to her is kind of key to the piece and for like feeling emotionally connected to it. You know, it helps to read the rest of the poem through the lens of, you know, her emotional attachment to it, or at least what she appreciates about it. So excellent observation. We have 14 minutes left. I think that's enough time to do one more. What do you think, Faciana?
I agree. I think we can do one more. So this one is by Scraps and Scribbles. And is it your turn, Babbler?
That sounds right. If not, I'm going to read it anyway. This is With the Closing of the Book by Scraps and Scribbles. Another world I wandered in is done, unborn again with the closing of the book. But even so, the spell it wove is spun. I wandered, lost, beneath the younger sun, and kissed a princess while the thunder shook. Ah, but that world I wandered in is done. I laughed with thieves, befriended everyone, conspired with spies to talk of knights and rooks. But after all, the spell we wove is spun. I heard the sirens, yet am not undone, and dared the hazard of Medusa's look. But ah, the grief I wandered in is done. Apprenticed Merlin when the sword was won, and wept for Arthur when his fate mistook. But after all, the spell they wove was spun. And I was there to see Bagheera run to Mowgli when the tiger would not brook. Now all these worlds I wandered in are done. But after all, the spell they wove is spun. End poem. I really liked this piece. The rhyming is interesting in it. It kind of, it jumps. You know, we've got the A rhyme kind of is in every single stanza as the first and third line, and then the B line is literally the middle of every stanza. So there's really only two rhymes. You've got the un and the ook that kind of go throughout the whole thing, which is hard to stick to, but it's wonderfully done. And I love how it's taking you through some of the books they've written, you know, kissing princesses and laughing with thieves and talking with, you know, doing chess and conspiring with spies and all of these fantasies and topics that exist in so many of the books that you read, especially when you're young, is really, I think, well done and yet so brief. You know, there's not a whole lot of lines in this poem, and yet so many things are touched upon. I did particularly like the last stanza, you know, where it gets into the Jungle Book very particularly. I mean, it also touches on Arthur, you know, and Merlin as well. But I felt like the connection at the end with Mowgli and Bagheera very tightly done and tied more closely into the theme of like a children's book. And while it repeats the lines that the book is done, the spell it wove is spun is the other line, meaning it's still there. You know, the magic of it isn't dead. The book is closed, but the spell has already been cast. you know, cast upon a memory, you know, like woven into their childhood almost, is how I took it. And I thought that was a really beautiful concept. And the writing of this itself is kind of reminiscent of those childhood books that very often do rhyme, you know, like Dr. Seuss and some other ones. So I thought this was a beautiful write and really kind of got at the magic of reading, especially for a young reader. So well-written scraps and scribbles. Daniel, your thoughts?
I really liked your comments a lot. I think you hit everything correctly. And I am inspired. I mean, the rhyming is great. I'm definitely inspired from the poems today to rhyme. I don't do rhyming enough, and I enjoy doing it. I love lyrical type poetry. So my next one, I'm going to try to rhyme. And I, too, like the Jungle Book references. And I think this is another love affair to books. You know, it's certainly not surprising, right, that people on this website have always connected with books. I'm sure there's a lot of avid readers. And what I really liked about it was the fact that, besides the rhyming and so forth, that she didn't just pick one book. She intertwined, he or she, I don't know who Scraps and Scribbles is, intertwined all the books, because there are a lot of different ones. You know, not necessarily one book. It's that discovery of these worlds and these places you can go to. So she's talking about all of the different magic things that she did, right? She's got Merlin, she's got sirens, so she must have just got into a lot of mythology. I know my wife was really big on Welsh mythology when she was a kid. She read a lot of those books, that's where we actually went for our honeymoon. We went to Wales kind of for that reason, to kind of go in to literally discover the places where those mythologies were. And then, you know, Merlin, right, she talks about Arthur and all those mythologies. So obviously she had a lot of that. But then I really like how that's the reason why I mostly like the Jungle Book being in here, because I always thought of the Jungle Book as kind of like a mythology for India that he wrote, even though it wasn't necessarily, you know, these crazy myths, but it just seemed like legends a little bit. That's what Tolkien was trying to do. He knew that England had legends, King Arthur and so forth, but they didn't really have any myths like the Greek myths and the Roman myths. So he wanted to come up with a myth. He wanted to write a mythology for England, and I just like how she talks about all that, but then ties that in as well too. So just this, you can just feel this kind of adventure that this person went through as a kid in this, again, another love affair of books. So beautiful written, a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
Wonderful comment. You're funny that you went to Wales for your honeymoon, because I also went to Wales for my honeymoon.
Oh, really? Did you?
But,
that's so
interesting. Yeah, my wedding anniversary was actually yesterday. Oh, that's what I did. I went to Chepstow and Pembroke and I forget the name of the other place, except all I remember about the name of that place is that it sounded not good, but it was fine.
Oh.
It had a name, I want to say it was like Fish Wharf or like Fish Head or something weird. And I'm like, this doesn't sound very nice.
I'll have to think. I can't remember. I mean, I remember it vividly. I can't remember. I know we went to Anglesey Island, a couple of places, but it was really amazing. I mean, it was out of Tolkien. Every day I'm walking around, I'm like, because that's what Tolkien wrote about was that
it's
area.
Beautiful.
I mean, to me, Snowdon is the Lonely Mountain. But yeah, it's so beautiful. And we went and we got married in October 30th, so we were there completely off season. Mm-hmm. So we're literally staying in these castles by ourselves, like, because it was just way, way off season. And I remember a couple of people, you know, actually apologizing. I'm you know, it's usually busier if you come another time. I'm like, this is great. We have the whole place to ourselves. Like, it was just, I don't want people. What's wrong with you? It was really a lot of fun. We spent a week in Wales and a week in London. And I loved it. So that's really amazing. That makes me so happy that you went there too. That's a honeymoon, in my opinion, going on an adventure.
Yeah, we did London, Wales, and Ireland. So.
Oh, excellent.
Ireland being vague because it was split between Red Cross at a sheep farm and Dublin.
You had the went the same honeydew as me. I've never, I haven't met anybody that done the, that did that before, so that's amazing.
It was gorgeous.
I am so envious. I did not get a honeymoon. I was in the hospital.
That's terrible. Go on a
belated. Too late. Go now. Yeah, it's never too late.
How about your birthday,
honeymoon? Someday.
No, it was beautiful. Yeah, we were mid-September. So, anyway, your thoughts.
I loved this poem so much. It shows how a book like transports you and makes you feel like you're a part of the adventure. Like you're the one hearing the sirens, who you are the one seeing Medusa. You get to like experience as you read, and that's one of the things that I like about books more than, say, TV or movie, because especially if they're in first-person perspective, it's like the story is all around you. Like, you're right there in it. You're not just watching it. You're experiencing it. And I think that this captures that feeling. I've been looking at getting this tattoo, and it's a picture of a book that has things coming out of it, and it says, I've lived a thousand lives. And I feel like this shows that. It's like you've lived so many different lives and experiences with each book, and even when they are done, even if you're closing the book, the spell it wove is spun. It's still alive in you. There's still that lingering magic of it in your mind, where it's like you've experienced it. And I think that that's absolutely beautiful. So this is one of my favorites, I think, for this contest.
Yeah, it is beautifully done. I really enjoyed it as well. And that sounds like a lovely tattoo. I don't have any tattoos, but I like that as a concept.
I don't yet. I have so many that I want. My husband has a lot of them. I'm a bit of a wuss, but I mean, like, I'm getting better about it. I've had so many needles now. I'm like, I don't even feel it. So I feel like I could do it now. I've finally gotten up the courage. They're expensive, though, so I haven't done it, but someday.
Yeah.
We have one super, super short one by Doc Frank that we might as well do because we have 3 minutes left. So let's throw in that one because it's super duper short. And Daniel, I think it's your turn to read if you're willing.
Absolutely. I'll go do short and short comments. So Doc Frank, Sinner to Saint. Personal forgiveness is a powerful impact. It can remove guilt and freeze sinners to become saints if converted. End poem.
Great read. I mean, this piece is a little more about the concept of the show than the theme, but I do like that it kind of hits that on the head of what is the theme of our show, you know, a personal forgiveness, you know. You can be part sinner and part saint, and if you've had, like, a rough past, you should forgive yourself for those things. Like, don't forget, don't slide back, but don't, like, carry it like a weight. I think it's important. So, wonderful write from Doc Frank. Athesiana, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm realizing that he has submitted this to multiple contests for our show. So I think he just likes the name of our show, not so much the specific contests. But, you know, he does sort of capture the overall concept of, you know, there's a little bit of good and bad in us and that you can get over the dark side and move into a better place in your life. So, you know, he grasps the concept of the show, just not the specific contest.
your thoughts, Daniel?
I get to the last comment. I'm so honored on the show. I agree. You guys said it all. I like the compositional of it. I like the word personal as its own line. So personal. And he just, you know, how all of that, what he's talking about is a personal thing. So I like how personal and forgiveness are its own lines and how it kind of makes the little pyramid the way that he designed it. So it's beautiful. He does really well with the brevities. So awesome job, Doc.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, thank
he
you
does
so
really
much.
Well brevities. Go ahead.
Thank you, Dan, for calling in. It was great to have you here. Thank you to everybody who wrote for our contests and let us share your poems. Thank you to Fill My Eyes for giving us this time slot on her radio station. Thank you, Babbler, for being awesome with your comments and just being super organized. Awesome. And everybody, keep a lookout for more contests. I always have at least one open, usually several. So check out Aphasiana on allpoetry.com and enter to be on our show. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night.